Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at the United Nations in New York. Coming up in this week's program, a doctor in South Sudan explains why timely medical attention is crucial for victims of sexual violence, and a program harnesses the power of sport to transform the lives of girls in Brazil. But first, testimony from the survivors of atrocities committed by the ISIL terrorist group in Iraq has been described as heart-wrenching by the United Nations. Over 300,000 people from the Yazidi community escaped from the city of Sinjar following an attack in 2014. Many have detailed systematic and widespread killings, sexual violence, and sexual slavery. Alpha Diallo has been speaking to Ravina Shamdasani from the UN Human Rights Office, OHCHR.
Now, we have interviewed several survivors who have fled ISIL territory, and the testimony has been really heart-wrenching. There are accounts of systematic and widespread killings, of sexual violence and sexual slavery, cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment, forced conversions, and forced displacement, among other violations of human rights and international humanitarian law.
Are these abuses committed by ISIL may amount to war crime, crime against humanity, and genocide?
There's a very strong likelihood that they amount to war crimes, crimes against humanity, as well as genocide. And if you look at the numbers, there were more than 300,000 Yazidis who were forced to flee Sinjar district. And those who were unfortunate enough not to manage to flee were subject to forced conversions on pain of death. Many of the women were separated from the men, and they had their children taken away from them. And they were sold, sometimes multiple times, to different men over the course of a year or a year and a half. And there are really heart-rending stories in this report about the kinds of violations they were subjected to.
And women interviewed by your team spoke of being sold multiple times and having their young children and babies snatched from them. This is very stressful.
Yes, there was this one woman who said that she was bought and sold to six successive men, and she had a seven-year-old daughter. She managed to rescue her seven-year-old daughter from the clutches of one man who tried to kidnap her. And what she did to her daughter was she cut off her hair, she cut off her eyelashes, she put the child in a diaper and told her to pretend that she's mentally ill so as to be able to protect her. In spite of all of this, an ISIL member tried to rape her. And this woman, she eventually reached a point of desperation where she tried to kill her daughter to protect her from the clutches of these men. Eventually, she managed to flee with the help of a smuggler. Now, this is a woman who survived. There are countless other stories of women who did not make it.
And which other testimony struck you more on this report?
There was another woman who was sold to a 26-year-old Syrian ISIL member, and this guy raped her regularly for at least 15 days, and he threatened to kill her daughters if she did not submit. I mean, this kind of testimony is so common among these women that really this report should serve as a clarion call to the international community to react.
Timely medical attention, as well as the availability of services, is crucial for victims of sexual violence in South Sudan. That's according to Dr. Abraham Tubo from the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, which provides post-rape intervention services in the country. The UN documented more than 200 cases of sexual violence during clashes between government and opposition forces in and around the capital, Juba, in July. Dr. Tubo explained that it is critical for victims to seek timely medical care in case they have contracted a sexually transmitted infection or find themselves pregnant. Lucy Jubara asked him about UNFPA's work in South Sudan.
United Nations Population Fund is providing financial and technical support through government health facilities and also to NGOs, national and international, in order to provide sexual reproductive health services, including post-rape care. And also, we do support the government with essential reproductive health medicine and supplies, including post-rape kits. And then thirdly, we train health facilities providers on the logistic chain management in order to move the supplies from the central warehouses to the regional warehouses to the health facilities and in the end to the end users.
Of course, you have methods you are using to encourage women to come forward and report if there is any rape cases. What methods you are using?
Actually, through our implementing partners, we do mobilize the communities and we tell them about the importance of seeking medical care after sexual violence, And most importantly, we also sensitize them on the issue of the timing of the services in order for the health providers to be able to prevent certain infections like HIV and also prevent pregnancy. For example, for a survivor to give a full protection of HIV, she must come to the health facility within 3 days so that she gets full protection from HIV infection. Full protection for pregnancy, a survivor must come within 5 days. We also sensitize them about the referral pathway. We have focal people who they can report, and those people will bring the survivor to the health facility for medical care and also, if need be, for legal and also protection services.
Does the local culture stand as a barrier to do your job?
Yeah, for example, in some cultures, it is very difficult for the community to report a sexual violence case because sometimes there is issue around stigmatization, that everybody will know that something has happened to their daughter or their wife or so on. And stigmatization also can come due to fear of rejection. And also, especially for the young girls, the fear of not getting married and also fear of retaliation. So sometimes those are the barriers, and that make actually the sexual violence, it is very difficult to be reported on.
So what are you doing to break the silence?
In order for us to break this silence, we again sensitize the community about the importance of medical care. And also, we always do emphasize to them that everything we do, it is confidential and it is done with the dignity and respect.
350 girls from the favelas of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, were among the countless spectators cheering on athletes at the Olympic Games, which recently wrapped up in that city. The girls take part in a pilot program launched by UN Women with partnership from the International Olympic Committee, the IOC. The initiative, which is called One Win Leads to Another, uses sports to empower young women and girls, thus enabling them to take control of their lives. Laura Jarrell spoke to UN Women's social media manager, Beatrice Frey, who helped start the program.
One Win Leads to Another is a program that uses sport as a tool to empower young women and girls in the Rio favelas. It taps into existing sports programs in the Olympic villas, and we add a curriculum to that sports program. Twice a week, we go in and talk with the girls for an hour, in addition to their sports training, about leadership, about economic empowerment, how to plan financially for the future, about health, getting to know their bodies, and about what to do in a case of violence and how to access services of violence and how to prevent violence.
And what have you been seeing are the results of that program?
The activities just started in May, and you can really see the transformation of the girls. On the Saturday after the opening ceremonies, we held an event in Rio to showcase the first experiences of the girls of the program. We brought 200 of the girls to this high-level event with high-level speakers, and three of the girls were up on stage and shared their experiences as well. And you can really see that transformation of being empowered through sport. One girl shared how, you know, the day of the event, she had to get up at 4 a.m. to be picked up by the bus from the favelas to get to our event, and she saw her friends hanging out there still from the night using drugs and trying to lure her in to stay with them. And she said, no, I have to go. I'm on a good path, and I'm who I want to be, and I can take leadership and be empowered. So that was really powerful.
And so obviously with all of these programs, UN Women definitely sees a connection between athletics and changing the lives of girls and women for the better. Can you tell me why that is?
So sports in itself are very empowering. You learn to focus on your strengths. You learn to focus on a goal. You want to win. You want to achieve something. So that already helps, you know, to apply those skills in real life. That helps to develop leadership skills, to be empowered overall. And then, of course, team sports, in addition to that, are very helpful to build a sense of team, of spirit, of commitment that are very well applied to the workplace, for example. And then our program, One Win Leads to Another, builds on what sports already does to empower young women and girls and adds that curriculum to it. So they're empowered through sports and have that additional component as well.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.